laughed at Christopher Columbus when he said the world was round. They'll laugh when Edison recorded sound. They'll laugh at Wilbur and his brother when they said man could fly. They told Marconi that wireless was a phony. It's the same old cry. They laughed at me wanting you, said I was reaching for the moon. You came through. Now they have to change their tune. They all said we never could be happy. They laughed at us and how.
Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning, the
27th.
I was going to say the great sounds of Tony Bennett. Oh. Leading us in. Tony Bennett's going to be a guest on our program at 10 o'clock. We're very, very excited.
Cool.
He's going to be at Tanglewood, closing out the Tanglewood season on Sunday. So we'll hear from the great Tony Bennett throughout the morning and some good music. We have some good stories to talk about as well. Let me introduce the panel and then invite you to join in on our discussion as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I'm working so hard on making sure that the Berkshire Ramblers are all tuned up and ready to go on Saturday night.
At the Guthrie Center.
At the Guthrie Center, and the tickets are flying out the window.
Are they?
Oh, indeed.
They're flying.
Yeah, they're flying.
I see them flying now.
No, they're flying. I was talking to George Lay, who handles these such things. He says he's delighted with the... The way it's
now, do
going.
They have chairs for bluegrass shows?
Oh, yeah. No, they have chairs. Okay. Only in your kind of music do they squat.
What do you mean my kind of music?
Whatever that is.
What are you talking about?
Dingle music.
Dingle jazz?
Yeah.
Well, dingle. I don't know if there's much squatting going on in jazz. Right. Great tradition of jazz in this country.
Right. I'll ask Tony Bennett. It's out of
his soul. That would be really good.
I want you to know how jealous I am. I think he is one of my great heroes. That is a great interview. So glad you scored it, Joe.
Well, thank you. It's, you know, he is... I don't know if he squats.
No, I mean, I really do want to go there. I mean, that's the other question.
That's not the kind of music I'm talking about. He's wonderful.
Right. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about, you know, senseless and non-ending dingle music.
Dingle. You know, I got to say, I have no idea. you know, let's just move on.
Let me just remind you, the Berkshire Ramblers.
Decidedly non-dingle.
Saturday.
Well, remember who started
Saturday night.
All this. You know, do they have chairs? Well, is what you said.
You know, I thought you put some sawdust on the floor. You have a little hootenanny, you know?
That was a shot, and
right.
I know a
some
shot when I
hear it. Peanut shells.
Exactly,
and
exactly.
Yeah. None of that at the church. So all of this at the Guthrie Center, and you can find out more. I think it's GuthrieCenter.org, I believe.
You can go to 413-528-1955, which was a very good year. 1955. 413-528. 1955. Operators are standing by.
Or you can leave
here
a message.
Here at Lewis Aluminum.
Ray Graff is here as well, our WAMC newsman, here to add to the conversation, as he has done already. Good morning, Raymond.
Quite jazzed to be here.
Yes, I know you are. And Rosemary Armeo, ever patient, sitting and waiting for
I'm
us
I'm not
to...
talking anything about music.
No, you're a music fan.
I want news.
Okay.
You want news? No dingle music for you?
No.
All right.
We got to look up what, in fact, dingle music is.
I'll explain it to you on the when we're off the
I end. See. I see.
Because it comes with another word. Okay.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Wow, it's time
really?
To leave.
Okay.
This is not a good start.
No.
No.
Start again.
Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable. Let's talk about issues of the day. Administration officials characterize the dangers facing the Turkmen who are Shia Muslims considered infidels by ISIS as similar to the threat faced by thousands who were driven to Mount Sinjar in Iraq after attacks by the militants. The United Nations Special Representative for Iraq said in a statement 3 days ago that the situation there demands immediate action to prevent the possible massacre of its citizens. The headline for the New York Times article this morning is that U.S. mobilizes allies to widen assault on ISIS. The United States has begun to mobilize a broad coalition of allies behind potential American military action in Syria and is moving toward expanded airstrikes in northern Iraq, according to administration officials. We were talking about this yesterday, and I find this whole issue, I know we've talked about this a lot over the past several weeks on a wide range of issues, but this idea of allies and who our allies are. and who we mobilize.
Well, we've all been saying it from the very beginning. I think that the basic premise, which were that the old strongmen were bad, and that the new guys could be our allies if we just cooperated with them, doesn't turn out to be so. And that with some inevitability, we produce the former Osama bin Ladens or the future Osama bin Ladens. These are not democratic organizations, these armies and these militia groups. What they are is a strong man takes them over to, and then when it's his turn, he becomes what the other guys were. So while that may seem cynical, I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary.
There's two things about this story that interest me. One is that it connects with another issue we may talk about this morning, where the Obama administration is trying to get some action without the cooperation of Congress on climate control. And here he is trying to get action on Syria. It's the second time he's tried to go in with military action against Syria. He was stopped the first time by congressional unpopular dispute against him, and now he's trying to go wider. Very interesting that he's using the Turkmens, another minority that are being targeted by these Islamist extremists. The last time you remember, it was the Yazidis who were on top of a mountain, supposedly. That turned out not to be quite the dramatic story that we all thought it was, that there were miscalculations by the part of the administration. And I read this and I'm cynically thinking, this really doesn't have anything to do with the Turkmens. This is his excuse. This is his, we have to save these people, just like we said with the Yazidis, and now we have an excuse to go in and we look like, oh, we were forced into it.
It's funny how they revised that whole thing with them on the mountain. Days later, well, it wasn't as bad as
they actually
thought.
Lived there, and they didn't want to leave, and they weren't stranded. Yeah, it was kind of a big difference.
Yeah, it's actually a resort.
But you really make a great point that there is always an inflammatory event which precedes the placing of boots on the ground. Or naval work. I mean, one of the great...
Something more than just dropping bombs from afar.
Ray, one of the great bluegrass tunes of all times it was all about that battleship of Maine. See, because same thing there. And to this day, we don't really know what happened there.
Correct.
It was at war with the great nation Spain. When I get back at home, I'm going to do it again. Something like that. Yeah, okay. Ray is... okay, that's okay, Ray. You can make fun of me.
No, I'm loving it.
Are you?
Yeah,
okay. It's cold in here.
Yeah, the whole dispute in Syria is a result of what we unleashed. You know, when we attacked Iraq and we took things that were in balance out of balance and gave it a reason. I think that was an excuse, too, that we had to get rid of the evil Saddam Hussein regime. And what has been uncorked there will last for a generation. We're seeing that. We have set off a regional conflict.
So this idea of allies, as you alluded to a moment ago, Rosemary, is the last time we tried this in Syria, part of the problem was because, yes, there was political pressure here at home, but there was also a lack of allies of anybody behind us that was willing to do this.
Just a total lack of interest in it. And, of course, you had Iran and Russia with Putin.
Right. So where are we now when it comes
to allies? Well, that's why I think it's interesting, because the allies are incredibly put out now with Putin as well, as a result of what's happening in the Ukraine. And so Obama is making a humanitarian call. He's certainly the beheading of that journalist really helps the effort. And it may be that we're going to see action this time. There's a lessening of the resolve not to go to war in the United States, I think, too.
Is the Assad regime posturing when it says you better get our approval, even though you'd be doing our dirty work for us?
We talked about that yesterday. I don't get the Assad regime. I don't understand that call at all.
So far we have Albania, Canada, Croatia, Denmark, France, Italy, and Britain have committed to sending arms and equipment to the Kurds.
And, of course, that's always the way it starts.
And adding that...
Then there's advisors. Yeah. That's step two. And then there's expand the advisors.
Chuck Hagel says that they would expect to accelerate in coming days, with more nations also expected to contribute.
Well, if there's one thing that has been learned over the years is that you assemble a coalition before you commit.
So now are we at the point where we were before the first Gulf War, where now boots are going to be on the ground? Is that where we are, even though the president a few weeks ago said no way?
done lots of reading on that, and the consensus seems to be that you cannot do, you can only do a limited amount with bombing, with airstrikes, with those clean airstrikes that don't endanger our men, that if you don't put troops on the ground, or I don't know what else, what the alternative is, maybe a naval attack.
But don't you...
Then, Alan, what happens, even if you do that, okay, to what end? Okay, we wipe out ISIS,
exactly.
Then what?
And then the other guys come back, and we've done their dirty work for them.
Yeah, then Assad is back in?
No. But then remember that he is, remember that the ISIS are not well thought of by the Al-Qaedas. So, and the Al-Qaedas were the big enemy. And now the Al-Qaedas are releasing a prisoner to show, I think, basically their goodwill that they're on our side. Right?
No, yeah.
Yeah. And now we'll go in and we'll help get rid of the ISIS. And who will be back? The Al-Qaedas.
Yeah. I feel so sorry for the people, the Arabs and the people in northern Africa who, 3 years ago in the Arab Spring began what looked like a real popular push for democracy, for liberalization, for a change of the old administration. Mm. And they have come back now, and people are worse off than they were. Their homes are destroyed. Their cities and their economies are in disarray. And I'm not sure that we are helping that. We've set off new crises that we have to deal with. And when that's done, what's the result? It's a mess.
We're going back to that idea of boots on the ground and what that is, and as Ray was asking the question directly, you know, is that what we're talking about? And the only word that seems to be used by everyone, and I, maybe. You know, it's one of those things that I don't really know what it means, but in an intensified effort.
Yeah.
That's the word that's being used, intensified
effort. And in fact, Ryan has just written us and says, you guys really think that it will come to war? The answer is, you know, war is World War II, World War I. There is this, certainly we're killing our own kids, and, you know, we're not killing them. The enemy, so-called enemy, is killing them. But in fact, by committing, we are. But we don't call it war. War is what you have to go to Congress for.
Yeah. No, I think it could come to that. I think it could definitely come to battle, to put it that way.
Where? In Syria proper?
In Syria or northern Iraq.
But the question... Northern Iraq being one thing, where they've sort of said, we need your help. Syria, at least posturing, saying, you better run it past us first.
It's sort of like Vietnam, where we were at war, but we bombed Laos and Cambodia, too, because that's where the supply and,
right.
and the roots were.
But do we have any sense of what's going on? That's what's killing me here. We don't. We don't really know what our administration knows. We don't know what they're planning to do. Right? I mean, we just don't know.
And as we learned in
Iraq. So how can any intelligent people, you know, legitimately discuss this kind of thing?
As we learned in Iraq, what's the end game? Okay, we bomb them, we stop them, we get them out of Mosul, we get the dams back, we push them back. Okay, great. Then what?
Well, and to Alan's point, so you erase one threat and then you just replace it with another.
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, the Al-Qaeda people, and then what happens is all of our efforts go to making terrible people, which often they are, out of the outcast. So right now we're laying off on Al-Qaeda a little bit, and it's the ISIS people who are the real boogeymen.
I don't know if we've laid off Al-Qaeda. We have turned our attention to ISIS. And
the media has.
The media
has, don't you think the media to some extent is a reflection of the government?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Well, read the Russian press and see what they say about what the Russians are doing, and read the U.S. press and see what they say about what we're doing.
Yeah,
I think there's a relationship.
Just because we blab about ISIS to the exclusion of Al-Qaeda doesn't mean the government isn't still worried about Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we even know what the relationship is between ISIS and Al-Qaeda. It would be great to think of them as rivals who are not going to knock each other off, but there's no real evidence of that. And the other thing that's really strange is ISIS is trying to draw the U.S. into this, which doesn't that make you worried?
To what end?
Yeah, why? Why do they want to? Is it an ideological thing? Because their war is against the infidel Americans. I don't know.
Seems like it'd be more than.
But they're provoking,
right?
Yeah. They're incredibly provocative here, beheading journalists, attacking, isolated people that and their own isolated minorities and their own people. horrible stuff towards women. So what's going on?
Well, a part of it has to be the quest for leadership among the among these folks. So, for example, you know, the Hamas people outdo the, you know, the more moderates in the Gaza area. And they say, okay, the harder, the tougher we push, the more people will like us. So a lot of this has to do with leadership within
right.
that area.
So is a quest for leadership a struggle for power?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's a big battle going on about who will govern as far as groups, religious groups, and Islamists are in control or out of control in a lot of places. I mean, Egypt, we saw that they got the Muslim Brotherhood got in, then were kicked out by the military. We have the election in Turkey that put a very strong Islamist now in charge of that government. Mm. There's lots of jockeying going on. The Emirates and the Gulf countries are actually weighing in on the side of the U.S. against Syria. So it's not just Syria and Iraq. It's much bigger.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation on this and many other issues as we go on through the remainder of the hour. We welcome your comments. Again, Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Arameo, I'm Joe Donahue. We make up the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Oh, that's it, yeah. The man who lives only making money lives a life that isn't necessarily sunny. Likewise, a man who works for fame, there's no guarantee that time won't erase his name. The fact is, the only work that really brings enjoyment is the kind that is for girl and boy, man. Fall in love, you won't regret it. That's the best work of all if you can get it. Holding hands at midnight beneath a starry sky. Nice work if you can get it. And you can get it if you try.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel. Listening to a little Tony Bennett this morning. Let's get back to our conversation. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And I think at last count, we had three to read you.
Yes, we do. Ryan, I hope it doesn't come to war. We have too many problems at home. To me, it's no coincidence that as tensions between the rich and poor continue to rise and racial tensions increase, we are finding a way to gut a war again. So disappointed in this president who I voted for twice. He was supposed to be different. And Lucy says, dear Roundtable, if ISIS is undermining Islam, why isn't the Muslim world expressing outrage and leading this fight? Luca in Woodstock, New York. And Deborah says, history repeats. When will we learn that the enemy of my enemy is my friend always comes back to bite us in the you know what from Deborah.
Mm-hmm. What?
Buttocks, I believe.
Ah, yes, I yes. We welcome your notes. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll hit this quick, and then we'll go to the climate accord. But the New York Times has announced that they are not going to endorse anyone in the primary. They are not going to endorse Governor Cuomo or Zephyr Teachout in the Democratic primary, and they have that on their editorial page of the paper this morning.
And we heard from Kenner on that very subject. Here is a short version of the New York Times non-endorsement for governor. Cuomo, : too corrupt, yuck. Teachout, regrettably not quite corrupt enough yet.
Very clever.
Astorino wasn't an option?
Democratic primary.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Democratic primary. Yeah.
Although Astorino does feature in the editorial, they don't want him to win. They want
surprising,
a Democrat.
Huh?
They think he would be a disaster. Yeah.
So there you go. It's a tough one. You know, Cuomo, the New York Times has a lot of power. obviously. It's a very, it's a major international institution. Cuomo's a guy who likes to micromanage. We all know that. And he doesn't like people who, you know, mouth off. So the, when the New York Times says we're not endorsing him, they are basically disendorsing him. If you're following, aren't they?
So this is very much an anti-Cuomo editorial, not a pro teach out.
Not at all.
And however. Congratulations to Zephyr. This is just what she wanted to do. She has put a spotlight on the need for reform and the end to corruption. Mm. She has she is a zealot on the topic of participatory democracy.
Yeah.
And she's done that. She said, hey, I'm a small person, and I can change the debate.
And she's also promoting herself, right? I mean, she's a very good friend of yours, right?
She is a good friend, and I think she's original and imaginative. Yeah. And I think we will hear from her again. I don't think she ever set out thinking she was going to really be governor. In fact, if she got voted in, I think she'd have a really steep learning curve. However, that's not the point.
But assuming you have been somewhat in contact with her, is it now entering at least the back of her mind that, oh gosh, I could win the primary?
I think she always had that in the back of her mind, but that's not the point of this. It was to get people involved and to point out the need for democracy that is not governed by corporations. And she has brought that that debate to a lot of people are talking about, including now the New York Times and Al Jazeera and NPR. She's been everywhere. This has been a very successful campaign.
We've had her twice. Statewide
good.
Program.
Good.
And early. Mm-hmm. Not when, the
right the, after the working class.
Not, till it,
not after, after the moral.
Not yeah. when the fashionistas.
Yeah. Oh, right. When everybody.
When, you know, everybody else is sort of. But
she's
you
worth an, listening to.
But you raise an interesting question. Could she win? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, in a primary, I think basically no. But in a primary, anything can happen. Anything can happen in a primary. Right now, Cuomo's numbers are still very, very good, you know, but things change, as Hillary found out.
She has several things going against her. One is that's just an enormous organization that the incumbent has, money-wise, politically organized-wise. She's a new operation. And number two, her issue is campaign reform and the Moreland Commission. People in New York do not care about that. If she were campaigning on guns, yeah.
Well,
if she were campaigning on some other gut level issue, she would have more of a chance. I think
I
for her a
you.
Win is 30%. Mm-hmm. She gets 30%. She's taken a knock at
well,
Cuomo.
Well, yesterday, Blair Horner, who probably knows more about this stuff than anybody I know, said that if she gets 30%, there's a very good chance that Tim Wu, who is running for lieutenant governor, may well win the lieutenant governor line, which would cause chaos in the Cuomo camp. Now, do I think that's going to happen? Again, I don't. But if she gets 30%, that's going to mean a lot of her people are out there voting.
So let's just play a what-if game, because we started off talking about the Times editorial. But if the Times had gone one step further, as you say, mostly an anti-Cuomo editorial,
right.
But if they went one step further and endorsed Teachout, would that have changed the game?
Yes. Because everything changes the game. Primaries are ill attended. So we're talking about maybe 10%, 15% come out. If that's the case, the zealots in either party tend to turn out much more than the namby-pambies, for want of a better word, people like me. So, but although I vote. So,
but not in New York.
Yeah, in Massachusetts.
Well, and to play devil's advocate here, though, newspaper editorials, even in general elections, much less primaries, seldom have a big effect.
Right.
And the New York Times really has a reputation as anti-Cuomo. So it isn't surprising that it came out and with this sort of a
well,
piece.
I agree with everything you just said. I think they are anti-Cuomo. Mm-hmm. I think that they have stood up to him in some very important places. As Joe will tell you, and as everybody will tell you from the Media Project, you know, I have never, you know, worshipped at the altar of the Times, but I think that they've done incredible work here.
Regarding the demographics of the state and the Democratic Party, does a heavy turnout favor the governor, assuming that there are more conservative Democrats upstate, or does a heavy turnout favor Zephyr Teachout?
We don't know, but the answer is I think a heavy turnout favors the governor.
Yeah,
because that means that the organization, all the people on the ground, have been able to pull in everybody.
Right.
You know, I remember back in the day when I was a kid, the back door used to ring, and there was a guy, and he was carrying petitions, and he says to my father, "Herman, you've got to vote. I've been promised a clerk judgeship, a judgeship clerk job, if you'll vote." My father used to dutifully go down. Those are the soldiers on the ground who pull out the vote.
Yeah.
And so the primaries was September 9th.
Right.
And so we'll see. But to me, it's a lot of time. I mean, there's still...
Oh, yeah.
And it's
building. It's a snowball coming down the hill. There's no question that people now know who Zephyr Teachout is in a way that they did not know. And the left of the party is adopting her.
So, and how big is the left of the party?
Well,
in comparison
you had Tonko yesterday, right? You had Tonko yesterday endorse it. Am I right on that or no?
I saw the first signs for her around Albany today. That was interesting.
I'm sorry, I did not hear about Tonko.
No, maybe I'm making that up.
Yeah. So my question was,
let me go check that
doesn't sound like Tonko.
This gets back to my question a moment ago. How big is the hard left of the Democratic Party? I'm trying to get a handle on that.
I don't know. I don't know. I think the question is not how big is it, but what percentage of the electorate come out in a primary and who they are. And if they are the left of the party, as in the right, the Tea Party people come out in the Republican primaries, these are the most energized people, and you only get 10% voting or 15% voting. That could be huge.
I would like to be on Zephyr's tenure committee. I think that's going to be a really a really interesting presentation.
I asked her about that. I said, let's face it. If you're the president of Fordham, do you really want to make the
governor? You did not get tenure. Sorry.
make this governor angry.
Yeah.
And she said, no, the faculty and the administration at Fordham have been wonderful to her.
Yeah, they were very supportive in the battle over her residency.
Yeah.
But what a great way to show to students use of the system and how the laws work, campaign finance.
You don't think, though, that a state bureaucracy would deny money to a public radio station or threaten not to give aid to a university. You don't think that, do you?
Oh, not in our democracy,
no,
Alan.
Of course not.
No. Did you find that?
I did not. I don't think it's...
Yeah. Doesn't sound like my friend Paul.
But anyway,
that would kind of annoy a sitting powerful governor.
Figure out what I heard.
Well,
he has
this incredible reputation, Cuomo, as being a guy who doesn't take any prisoners and who gets, angry. I've been told he's angry at me by people in the know. So Pataki was mad at me, too. In fact, did I ever tell you this? Probably have. But I have twin brothers, Lewis, and Lewis used to come up and visit with Pataki. And Pataki said to somebody, allegedly.
Oh, okay.
Did I tell you this?
No, go ahead.
And allegedly.
Now I know what I heard. He was endorsing Aaron Wolf yesterday. That's
Aaron Wolf.
I apologize.
That makes sense.
Yes,
he's
that
a Democrat
makes much more
running
sense.
For Congress.
I apologize.
And we had him on. I interviewed him yesterday, Aaron Wolf. But okay, so.
Wait a minute. Your twin brother went and visited.
My brother was a friend of Pataki's. He used to go up and he used to talk to him and get stuff for his agency, his social work agency.
Okay.
And Pataki was heard to say to somebody, I know those guys. He said, Lewis, I like a lot. Alan, not so much.
Let's take a break.
Climate control we have to get to, too.
Yes, let's take a break.
Okay.
We'll come back to climate control. Thank you for bringing us back on target.
Alan's in charge of the climate control in the studio.
Roundtable at WAMC.
Well, you wouldn't know. You come in here and you get your fingers
freezing.
Get blue.
Yeah. She has, look at her. Garments she has.
Yeah, wear layers.
Well, you can either wear them or,
Do you want me to not wear layers
in the
studio?
Quick.
We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from William H. Buckley Farm, Ballston Lake, New York, now hosting events and farm stays in a renovated farmhouse on a working farm. Butcher shop and store open 7 days, buckleyfarm.com. Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester, with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m., middletownmedical.com. And Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, presenting Steve Cohen, Executive Director of Columbia University's Earth Institute, discussing environmental policy and the path to a sustainable society, September 12th, 7 p.m., careyinstitute.org.
Thank you. Drop that long face, come on, have your fling. Why keep nursing the blues? If you want this old world on a string, put on your dancing shoes, stop wasting time. Put on your dancing shoes, watch your spirits climb. Shall we dance or keep on moping? Shall we dance?
Welcome back to the Roundtable and our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Rosemary Armeo. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about the climate issue and something that we alluded to earlier, or that Rosemary said that we would discuss. And indeed, she's right. she read her email.
We did hear from Tony, by the way.
Oh, what did Tony say?
Tony Bennett?
No, not Tony Bennett. Tony G. Good morning, people. Middle East trusts none to most of the politicos on either side in this country as to what's best thing to do. The pile is too deep already. Pile of New York State politics. Teach out would get my vote in a heartbeat. Cash and carry, parenthesis Cuomo, would put and have his old man turning over in the grave. His father isn't dead.
No.
If he were there over his son, in essence, a Republican in Democratic clothing. Wish I could say more, but I'd go off the deep end with this stuff. Tony.
Okay.
Climate.
The Obama administration is working to forge a sweeping international climate change agreement to compel nations to cut their planet-warming fossil fuel emissions, but without ratification from Congress. Rosemary Armeo.
Okay. This is an important and interesting story. So the media, the government, we're all doing a horrible job on climate control. We're
right.
hung up on whether it's true or not. The effects are already upon us. So the Obama administration has now come up with a way to get, we hope, some sort of action that does not require Republican or congressional approval. They're going to take a 1992 treaty and basically upgrade it. That treaty was approved by a different Congress in a different time. And so they're going to simply upgrade this by getting the approval of the big powers, who are the biggest polluters, to maybe follow some new rules and obey. And interestingly, Republicans hate it. That's not surprising. Many politicians in small countries and African countries and places where climate control is particularly forbidding are also worried about this, because without a treaty approved by the U.S. Congress, will they really get money to pay them for what needs to be done?
And
fascinating political story.
Well, it is. And then there's the other small thing, which is that we walked away from Kyoto and we had a chance to do something.
Right. And the Obama administration does not want a repeat of Kyoto. That was not good for anything, whether you are opposed to working on climate change or not. We just looked so bad there.
But also, I hate to say it, but there's always the political motive. Obama is being, yelled at for not doing enough on this thing. He does it. The Republicans block. He says, well, I tried. They're the bad guys.
Yeah. And, you know, it really, I think, works in this case. The Republicans right now are in the position of saying, we don't want the major polluters of the world who are worried about global catastrophe to meet and come up with a solution. They don't. We're opposed to this. It's against the Constitution. How can you say that?
I'm interested in the mechanism of this. Now, so as you describe it, and as the Times describes it, the plan is to update a 1992 treaty.
Correct.
Now, has this been done in the past? Is it, in fact, basically, so what you're doing is skirting Congress. Is that a standard way of updating treaties, as long as all parties agree?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Treaties have to be ratified.
This been done before?
Not that I'm aware of.
So it's an interesting angle.
It's a new tactic. It's Obama is playing politics, which I've faulted him for in the past, to just try to, you know, say, oh, I'm going to be different and it's going to magically happen. He's now figuring out what he can do legally, even though it hasn't been done before. It is a legal path, and he's attempting it.
You know, you got five Republicans sitting on the Supreme Court still. Sooner or later, it gets to them.
So is it fair
to ask the question, as you said, you know, we've been debating about whether it's true or not, and said, and meanwhile, the effects are upon us. Can the argument be made that, okay, this is all well and good, but shouldn't have been done 6 years ago when he came into office, as opposed to waiting until now?
Absolutely, it should have been done 6 years ago. He was a little bit busy with something called the bailout then, so we didn't pay attention to it. But, I mean, it's just not a good presidency that ignores the possibilities of catastrophe from global climate.
I mean, I thought it would be a major issue during the first campaign. I thought it would be a major issue during the second campaign. It wasn't, and now it is. You know, it is slowly evolved. But it's amazing to me that it hasn't.
This isn't the first thing he's done, though, Joe. I mean, there's this stuff on coal regulation, and Obama's
cars,
really
and
yeah,
driving,
right? Exactly. And he actually has run into opposition there too. There's pending court cases that want to stop that regulation. Yet he is doing as much as the Constitution gives the presidency the right to
there's
do.
There's a larger context here, I think, and that is an African American man who becomes president of the United States. A Republican phalanx, which is decided that we are not going to do anything. Our major job is to get rid of this guy. We're going to give him as hard a time as we possibly can. Obama's position has been, I want to be reasonable. I want to be a reasonable president. I want to work with people. I want to be able to do it. Absolutely not. We're giving you absolutely nothing. And that is where we stand. That forces Obama into the next iteration, which is, I'll do something that it may not really pass the political stink test, but I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm going to get credit for it. And when Jor-El sends his kid off the off of the earth, he'll be blamed.
Yeah, he McConnell threw down the challenge, and Obama's a smart man, and he's come up with things that I'm not sure McConnell thought of. But look at what's being set up here now. McConnell comes from a big coal state. He's totally opposed to the idea of doing anything about climate control that I can see, and he may be in charge of the Senate in a very short time.
May very well be in charge of the Senate.
So this may not go anywhere.
We are going to end it for today. We would love to hear from you, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we welcome your comments this morning, roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, thank you all very much. And the roundtable continues on WAMC.